Hey guys, Andy here, and welcome to another episode of Two Bros, One Flick. I'm here today with Mr. A.
Hey everybody.
And Mr. B, back from a long vacation away from us.
That's right, I'm a little bit tired, but I think I can pull it together.
Well, thank you. Sadly, the co-host and the co-founder of Two Bros, Sam, cannot be with us tonight, but we will try to move on and do our best. Today, we are actually talking about an awesome summer flick in my book. It is Pacific Rim, directed by Guillermo del Toro, who's done, I think, Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy. Is there anything else he's done that people might be aware of?
I don't know.
That works. We don't know. I'm sure he's done a lot of cool Spanish films, like Spanish horror movies. I think he did. The name escapes me. But this is his take on the classic kind of kaiju, big monster genre from Japan. For all those people who aren't familiar with it, it's kind of like Godzilla and Mothra. And if you're a fan of those, you're definitely going to be a fan of this movie. And if you're not a fan of those, I still think there's a lot to like about this movie. So I'll turn it on over to Mr. A to give us the lowdown on kind of the general plot of this movie.
Sure. So this movie takes place, I think, in 2020. And basically all of humanity is having to deal with these big-ass motherfucking monsters who are coming out of the Pacific Ocean. And all the governments of the world have come together and pooled their resources to develop these big robots. Powered by two pilots. They're called Jaegers or Jaegers, right?
Jaegers.
German for hunter. And so they have a whole squadron of these things going around and dealing with these threats. But as of late, these monsters have gotten bigger, smarter, and been able to adapt to our technology. So they're trying to figure a way how to really deal with this problem.
Yeah, and the narrative layout, I think, is really... They made some interesting choices because it begins with a very strong victory of a Jaeger destroying a kaiju in a very triumphant way. But then it kind of flash forwards, I think 5 years, there's a gap. And then it goes into a bit of a retrospective to say that, you know, America and the rest of the world pulled together, pulled out resources, like Mr. A said, and it initially met the threat with, like, great kind of elan, if you will. And then they began adapting, and then the main crux of the movie takes place where humanity is essentially on its heels. And it's kind of that, I think there's a line in it that they say that, before we were fighting a war, now we're just part of the resistance. Humanity is right on the verge of getting taken over by these things. And that's kind of where the kind of narrative thrust kind of takes you in the outset. So.
Yeah, no, I thought this movie did a lot of things right. And you guys put it in such an eloquent fashion of what this movie is all about.
Big ass
motherfucking monsters. Robots and monsters. It's a match made in heaven. Usually we do this thing where we talk about what we liked about the film and what we didn't like so much about the film, and we'll get to that. But I think something with this, and we'll talk about the cast, I think that some of you people might know a couple of these faces, not so much as leading actors, but people you've seen in lots of other movies. Like, I think the Japanese actress has been in a lot of things, other than Pacific Rim, she's been in some Norwegian Wood. Norwegian Wood, if you guys know what I'm talking about, then that's a great book, actually. But those are for the few Japanophiles that listen to us, and I know you're out there. But, Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny is in there. Perlman is in there, right, from Hellboy. But I want to talk about kind of like the preconceived notions when I saw the trailer for this movie. I'm interested in what you guys thought, because I know when I first saw the trailer, I was like, this movie could be good, but more likely than not, it's going to be bad. And what I was surprised about when I came back, meet up with all my friends, a lot of these people who really like movies in general, like good quality movies, they still wanted to go see Pacific Rim, which I thought was really cool. And it actually turned out for the best. So, again, Mr. A, what did you think about when you first saw the trailer?
Well, to be quite honest, guys, when I first saw the trailer, I said, that's a piece of shit. You know, I don't think, and I thought it was just going to be some stupid Hollywood blockbuster movie that some dickhead said, this is a good idea. But I decided to go see it anyway because, you know, number one, there wasn't a whole lot playing. And then also, there was the very small possibility that it could be a very good popcorn flick. And, you know, sometimes those initial impressions you have, they don't work out to be true. And that's exactly what happened in this case today. I thought I didn't have a whole lot of that high expectations coming to this. I thought my intelligence was going to be insulted. I was going to be pissed because I wasted, you know, $14 in the 3D at the movie theater and gas money and everything else. But you know what I'm saying. Yeah. But I thought you know at the very end of it, it's probably been along with Star Trek II. The most enjoyable movie, one of the most enjoyable movies I've watched this summer.
So yeah, my impression, the thing that drew me to this movie was, you know, on one hand, I think we all saw the 3D version, and I typically am against 3D. I think it's kind of more of a gimmick, and it's kind of a, you know, way to extract prices from the audience, things like that. But for movies that are done well and by directors that, you know, there's a reason to believe that they can use 3D well. You should go see those movies. I think there's a place for 3D movies, and I think this movie is exactly that place. And visually, it was remarkable. But we can get into that a bit later. For me, I'm a simple person. I can enjoy really complex movies, but I can really enjoy, like, you know, I think as Mr. A said, popcorn flicks. And you know, for me, the humanity up against the wall. Kind of a almost an apocalyptic kind of notion, which echoed a lot of movies that had come out recently. And then robots and, frankly, alien invasions, all of these things I will go. I saw Oblivion earlier this month. If that's any indication, I will see anything that has any kind of sci-fi alien kind of thing to it. So I went in it with very low expectations, but, you know, I kind of meet the film where it's at. Now, given that, it far surpassed my expectations. And I thought it was enjoyable on all kinds of levels. So,
yeah. No, I thought, like, this movie, I was like, you know, wow, this is not going to be good. And I like Del Toro's work. Like, I love Pan's Labyrinth. I thought it was a great movie. By the way, going back to the cast, what you guys were talking about, your kind of notions when you saw the trailer, Rinko Kikuchi, who was the Japanese woman that I spoke of before, I realized what movie it was. She is from Babel. She played the Japanese girl who couldn't hear in Babel. Who is also, and it's been a while since we've seen her in anything, but Babel, I mean, I'm sure everyone remembers probably like the final scene, which a great piano soundtrack from a Japanese composer as well, when they're pulling out end of the movie, right? She did a great job in that. But I'll just mention some of the things about the other cast. The protagonist in this movie, whose name is Raleigh, right? His actual name is Charlie Hunnam, I guess. But he was in a couple things. A lot of British people from the cast in this movie, which is interesting to me, and I don't know why. But he was in Children of Men, which is a very good movie. Also, Cold Mountain, solid book, good movie. And also, I think our standout favorite, and I think I can speak for all this, was when we were talking about the marshal in the movie, Mr. Elba, who has been in a lot of cool things. He was in Prometheus. Yeah, which I know Mr. B really likes. Also, Thor and Thor that's coming out. So he is actually, he has such a, he was also an American Gangster. I did not know that. 28 Weeks Later, Buffalo Soldiers. Okay, cool. Well, he's been in a lot of things, and I think we can all say he was probably the standout as far as performances go, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, man, I think that every time he was on screen, you just really paid attention. I mean, he had a real big presence in the movie, and I just thought he was it's a great ensemble cast, that's one thing, and he's the glue that all keeps it together. And I think I remember reading about him somewhere that when the people who were getting ready to, they were trying to recast the Bond character, you know, for the James Bond movies after Pierce Brosnan left, I think they were considering him actually playing Bond and kind of doing a new twist with a African American, or I guess British African Bond. But yeah, I thought he was excellent.
Nothing too much to add. I think the glue that brought everyone together is a really good way to describe it. At one point in the movie, he describes himself as a fixed point. There's chaos. The world is essentially coming to an end. The program, the Jaeger program, that has basically been up to this point humanity's last hope, which has been failing, is crumbling around them. He's kind of like the rock, and he pulls it off extremely well. So best performance of the entire movie, easily.
For sure, and I thought it was kind of cool how, you know, this guy commands fucking respect throughout the movie, and he kind of fucking commands respect of the viewer. Like, it is one of those things where, I mean, that's not to say the other cast was bad. This guy was just the standout. And, you know, I also, well, we'll put that in the good things.
One other quick thing on the cast, the main kind of human antagonist, obviously the antagonists are massive alien monsters, but there's another Jaeger pilot, and I just wanted to mention hasn't been in anything really to speak of, but he's currently like a huge character in True Blood, if you watch that on HBO, and he's one of the pivotal characters that's going to be in that show, so he's kind of, his star is rising. I read something about how Del Toro wanted people that he didn't want, like, really well-known people. He didn't want to cast them because he didn't want them to overshadow other various parts of it, to kind of keep it fresh and keep it, frankly, more realistic, because, you know, that's one of the problems when you hire a really big-name actor is it's hard to forget that you're watching the actor and look at the character. So I thought, in this case, that worked out really well.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you made a good point. Like, all these guys, you would recognize them. And, like, we were talking about Charlie Day's kind of serious foil, the other scientist. And he's actually in a whole host of things, including a couple episodes of Game of Thrones, playing a character named Carl, which I don't remember. But there's, like, a million fucking people in that show to begin with. So you can just say you're on Game of Thrones and they would probably believe you. He's also in Dark Knight Rises. And he was also in The Layer Cake, which I actually really liked that movie. But a lot of these people seem to be really heavy into the British movies. Like, I mean, Torchwood is definitely a British movie too. So great cast for the most part. I guess we'll just move it on to things we liked about the movies, because we have a lot of those. And things we didn't like are probably going to seem nitpicky. But I think basically, I guess I'll start off with the good things. In terms of talking about the actual threat, and we know it's dealing like where do these monsters come from, and how did this all happen? I'm not going to use the word feasible, but I'm going to say it's novel. I really like the idea that they came up with, and how it's different and kind of a fresh take, and not something far fetched. Was like, oh come on, you guys are just doing this to be different. It was a really cool way of talking about how these guys come up from the ocean and how they're doing and why they're doing it, and in terms of execution, I thought it was very well done. Pacing was pretty good. And I think the winner for me is probably like the special effects and the action scenes. I thought they were just fantastic. What about you, Mr. A?
Well, I just thought it was visually arresting watching all of it. I mean, the battle scenes between these big pieces of machinery and these bad-looking monsters, you know, just really arresting. And it never became trite, really, because, you know, you look at other blockbusters that came out through the summer, for instance. You know, we were talking about Man of Steel afterward. You know, the lacquer in that movie kind of wore off after, you know, an hour or so, and you just see General Zod and Superman, you know, duke it out. But here, you never feel that way in this particular film, because it's, everything is just so well done. And the other thing I really liked is that there seemed to be a nice balance between, you know, as serious as you can get in a movie like this, the serious aspects of the movie, and having the comic relief between the two scientists come in, because Charlie Day, I mean, talk about another show stealer. I mean, every time he was in a scene, I mean, you couldn't help but laugh, because he's just such a goofy character. And then Ron Perlman, too, when he shows up as a merchant. So, yeah, those were the things I really liked. The cinematography, just the real balance between the levity in the movie and just the more serious aspects that are going on. And, you know, it's intelligent. It never insults your intelligence. There's always a somewhat plausible explanation as to what's going on screen. So in that respect, I really enjoyed the movie.
One of the more innovative aspects of the movie is that, so in piloting these Jaegers, they have kind of a neural connection because of this massive robot machine essentially is an extension of the individual's body. There's too much of a neural load, I believe is how they put it. Too much information coming into your brain to interface in. So they work out a neural connection. This basically drives the main plot points and the characters in the movie for the most part, like the human character, the human story, not necessarily the humanity story or the monster story, but how the actual characters interrelate with each other. And so it provides a really good, interesting kind of somewhat novel mechanism. And I think Mr. A mentioned one of our discussions afterwards that it's somewhat like Inception a little bit, because in order to pilot these things, you basically need two people to, as they put it, to bear the neural load. And so they come up with this kind of novel idea that two people kind of jack in and they kind of, both of their brains, kind of their consciousness fuses basically. And visually it's really, to use your term, arresting, because you see both of them kind of latched into this machinery walking in concert together. And so you see a visual representation of what you can only imagine is, and as they later describe, is an incredibly intimate kind of relationship. So one of the kind of the challenges of the Jaeger program is that the pilots need to have like very good like fighting skills, and they establish a really interesting kind of martial arts background that's required of them, which easily translates into the later, you know, fight scenes with the monsters. But also required is a certain compatibility. And so, you know, there's multiple different teams, multiple different robots. There's one that's a series of triplets, a Chinese team. They're all, you know, naturally fused and compatible just by virtue of their genetics and upbringing. There's one that's a father and son. You know, we can get in later about the kind of the main characters there. But as far as like an innovative storytelling technique, I don't know that I've ever seen that. And I thought it was a really good way for the drift, as they call it, to provide kind of an interesting twist on how characters relate, because you basically know everything about the other person the moment that happens. And then like naturally that kind of change, it creates an interesting kind of storytelling, you know. So.
For sure. And it's one of those classic things where it's like they have a really great, unique power for the humans, but it's also comes with the cost of where it's really heavy. It's a really heavy tax. And you see that later with some of the characters on how heavy a toll it is to go through this process over and over again. You know, everything comes with the price, and it kind of brought the stakes of that much higher, which was really good for the movie. As far as things that we didn't like, I'll start, and I'll just say that, none of it detracted from the movie, which is good, but like, sometimes I thought that you have kind of like the natural conventions of any type of big action movie, kind of like, we're gonna skip some shit just to move on, right? Cut corners, or like plot corners, if you will, about how we're going to get here. Just make the jump and then move on. And I was willing to do that because this movie was going on so well. The pace was great. But I thought the protagonist, Raleigh, was a little stiff sometimes and lacked some chemistry. And this might be on the part of the Japanese actress too, but I think more on him. And they kind of forced him into being, you know, that they were going to be working together somehow. And that's the way it was going to work. But they just didn't make it feel like, they weren't like incompatible in any way, the acting thing, but I felt like it was a little forced, and I feel like that was more of the white dude's problem, because I think he was a little lacking as far as facial expressions, and maybe that's just the way they wanted him to be, because, you know, of what happened in his past or whatever, but also like his reaction and stuff, he felt a little stiff, and I thought that was, and in terms of everybody else's acting ability, I thought his was the most wanting compared to the Marshall, the Japanese actress, even like the smaller characters, like the two scientists and Ron Perlman, they all had spunk and flair. And I feel like this guy did not. And that was my only complaint of the movie. What about you, Mr. A?
Yeah, I see that. I mean, I think I made the remark to you guys after you watched it. I thought that guy was like Paul Walker out of the Fast and Furious movies. I mean, just cardboard cutout character. I think my criticism would be is like, well, where's the natural ending point of this? And there seems like there were several logical places where the end could happen, and it seemed to me it kind of dragged a little bit as they were coming to that final resolution in this, you know, battle between these beings, these monsters and humankind, you know. So that seemed a little protracted. But, you know, in the end scope of things, in the long run, I enjoyed this movie so much that even though it carried on probably for, I mean, because it was a long movie, about 2 hours and 30 minutes, 2 hours and 45 minutes, probably 15 or 20 minutes too long in some viewers' minds, I enjoyed the movie so much that I would be willing to forgive it for that, you know. But again, you know, maybe that's also a strength of the movie because they just don't want to, you know, force feed everything and jam everything in there toward the end and just give some type of unsatisfactory ending. I mean, the way the movie ended, it all that had to be teed up before you could end the movie in the way that it did. So maybe my criticism is a little bit more of a strength, but it did feel overlong at times. So,
yeah, I think there is strength in that criticism because you basically, you know, it's amazing that a robot and monster movie would be 2.5 hours and like we would love it, you know? And I kind of had the same feeling. I was never bored at any point. I would agree with the notion that the acting was one of the main problems with the movie because, you know, there's so much potential there. I mean, you go to see the robots and the monsters. So if there's not as much acting, then it's okay. And like, but there was the kind of the drifting thing and the kind of the notion of the consciousness melding. They could have done a lot. This could have been a remarkable movie if they would have delved more into the psychological part of that. So maybe that's kind of a missed opportunity, but at the same time, that's not what this movie really was kind of to be about to begin with. And I also just have to mention that there were just a slew of scientific problems with it. And I'm not going to go down the nitpicky road because, you know, the very fact that we have, you know, robots the size of the Empire State Building and then monsters the same size battling in the streets of Hong Kong, one must suspend disbelief a little bit. And so I'm willing to do that, and I won't hold that against the movie.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, there's it's the stuff that, like, kind of like the blockbusters do's and don'ts, like, kind of like you almost have to have these things in there. The acting, I think, can be forgiven because it's such a good blockbuster movie. But I talked to you guys earlier about there's this one bit where time is of the essence and the scientists must go and tell something to the army or else something's going to happen. And no one in fucking Hong Kong in the year 2020, 2025 has a cell phone that they could fucking borrow or, you know, low on battery or whatever. But it's things like that, the stuff like that, the scientific stuff that Mr. B mentioned, and the fact that it was a long movie, all this stuff I think can be easily forgiven because what you're treated to in the theater is a big, like, fucking slugfest between not humanity and essentially aliens, you know? And it's a good movie. And I guess we'll just go straight to the rankings out of a scale of 1 to 10. Did you want to say something, Mr. B?
Yeah, one more. Yeah.
Go for it.
Just before we go to the rankings, it'd be an oversight not to mention the really like creative particularity with which they crafted each one of the Jaegers and each one of the monsters as well.
Sure.
You know, each one of the like the Jaegers, which again are the huge battle robots, they're each from, you know, there's one from the Soviet Union, there's one from America, there's one from China, there's one from Australia. And each of them have kind of their own kind of nationalistic kind of identity to them, which is really interesting, I thought. And that was a really cool choice that they made. And also, each one of the monsters gets progressively, you know, more advanced and more kind of like armored, if you will, with various defensive and, like, you know, attack mechanisms. And that was just thrilling. And so in each, you know, everything about the matchups, because there were multiple different matchups between robots and monsters, I think one of the reasons why it could sustain a 2.5 hour, you know, time frame is that like each one of the battles was just riveting. And like after you saw the first one, the second one was in no way boring because it was totally new. So as far as the strength, like what more could you want from a monster movie? So, yeah.
Oh, this is just an observation. It's not a criticism of the movie or anything like that. It's just, you know, this I think is a really well done, fun popcorn movie to go watch. All of us really loved it. I think most of the people in the movie theater, they were having the time of their lives when they're in there. And I think it's just because of the way that the summer movie schedule has worked out. And maybe because, you know, a lot of people had the same reactions that we did when we first saw the trailers that this movie wasn't going to be worth their time. I'm afraid that this movie is it's not going to get the recognition that it deserves. I would love to see a sequel come from this, but, you know, I don't know how its box office has been, and I don't think it's probably hasn't lived up to its expectations, but, you know, this is really, really a good movie, and I'm afraid that a lot of people aren't going to be able to see it because just where it is in the summertime schedule.
Yeah, yeah. I think you got a good point because I was wondering if they would make their budget up, and as of looking at Wikipedia on the 20th of July, it is a $190 million movie, and it has made $110 million back. I mean, considering a movie lacking in star power with probably more CGI than any movie we've had this summer, I mean, they're going to make their money back. And I don't know if this is international markets included, but this is only the second weekend it's out. And I think it's going to be one of the slow burners where everyone's going to tell their friends it's not what the trailer made it look to be. Talking about observations, you mentioned, Mr. B, that each Jaeger comes from a different country, and we talked about earlier kind of like anime influences. There's actually a Gundam series where every country has their own specific Gundam with specific things to do, and they kind of go into a battle royale for like resources or whatever. I didn't watch the rest of it. I just know the premise. And then there's always everyone who is familiar with anime will know a movie called or a series called Evangelion, which is kind of the same premise of humans interacting with their own movements with the respective robots to fight off an alien threat coming to destroy Neo Tokyo in the not-so-distant future. So that was pretty cool. And you see a lot of influences from different genres. We mentioned Independence Day and all that stuff. But we'll move on to the ratings. I am going to give this one, I'm debating between a 9 and 8.5, because I very seldom give 9s, and I think just because the acting of this one fucking actor, I'm going to have to give it an 8.5. Everybody else is so good, and the writing, and it's probably an 8.5 because Mr. B brought up the point of there's so much more you could do with the drifting technique as far as character depth. Because when I first saw them do the drifting, I'm like, which one of these characters is going to lose their fucking mind and go crazy? Like, I want them to fry, like fucking this terrible PTSD in a robot, man, you know, is something terrible. I was like, you have so many cool things to do with that. And, you know, but I'm not going to be like, oh, it could have been such a better movie. Because I think you can, it's very small things that would have made a better movie, yes. But all the great things are still there. There's nothing, they're not lacking one big thing. 8.5, I would say, and go and watch it in the theaters. We watched it in 3D. I think that made a big difference. But theaters, go see it.
I think I'm also going to have to give this an 8.5. And it's not because I'm detracting from anything about the movie. Even though the acting was weak from that one particular actor, I thought that the ensemble acting was so good. And just Idris Elba's badassery in the movie, and Charlie Day and Ron Perlman, I mean, all of that was so good. The cinematography is so good. The story is so good that I can't see any reason just to ding it down. You know, 9 and 10s, likewise, Andy, I'm very reluctant to give those. I only give those to movies which I think go beyond genre conventions. And this one does, too. Or movies that go just really, it's just you're knocked on the floor by them. You know, stuff like, I don't know, 2001 A Space Odyssey, for instance, you know. That stuff would warrant a 9 or a 10. But this, it's a solid a summer movie. It's everybody's going to love it. You don't have to like science fiction, or you don't have to be an anime follower to like this movie. There's a lot there for everybody. It's just a great summer entertainment. And like I said, if you can watch it in 3D, that's great. You know, they even have it on IMAX. So I'd like to see this thing on IMAX. I might go see it again.
IMAX 3D, too.
IMAX 3D, okay. Yeah. But that depends if I have $9 and put your gas money.
Yeah, there you go. well, this is, I guess, going to be across the board because I'm going to have to go 8.5 as well. Very similar, you know, 9s. I don't think I could, as good as a monster movie can be, or a popcorn movie, blockbuster kind of thing, I don't think I can give that a 9. And even, you know, I think everything should be judged by its own genre. But, you know, in this case, I just can't go beyond a 9. This really reaches the upper pinnacle of anything I've seen kind of in anything remotely like this. Just a couple of things unmentioned. The black market aspect of this, when a kaiju falls, this is why I thought it was really complex. And I like kind of all this hidden backstory, because they do this kind of historical background, which it just hints at things, but it like lets your imagination go down these roads, which, you know, you can go down because they open them for you. They don't walk down them themselves, but the notion of selling, which is really big in Asia right now, you know, selling rhino horn, for example, for male virility. They have this whole like built up kind of black market thing around selling bits of the kaiju that are laying dead in the middle of Tokyo, for example, or dead in the middle of, you know, like Sydney. I thought that was awesome. And I think it's that kind of like very subtle kind of things that just kind of suggest this entire world that they don't show you. That's really why I love this movie, because it lets your imagination kind of go wherever it wants to. Also, absolutely thrilling. I don't really even like fight scenes. I love these. They were great. I enjoyed really every moment of this movie. So yeah, 8.5 easy.
Perfect. Well, that's a 8.5 across the board, which is very seldom that across the board we get the same fucking rating. I think this could be a fucking first. So, I mean, it was that good. And I agree with both the guys here when it's like you don't have to be a fan of any of these. I would venture to say you could hate Godzilla movies. You could think they're cheesy and terrible, and go see this and your mind will change. As far as like the potential a kaiju movie has, you know. Definitely one of the best movies I've seen this summer. Definitely tops Man of Steel. Big fuck you to Zack Snyder from Two Bros, One Flick. But anyway, Mr. A, Mr. B, thank you for being here.
As always, man.
Yeah, great pleasure.
All right, you guys are awesome. And hopefully we'll have some more podcasts coming your way from these guys as well. We've got more summer movies to discuss. And as always, if you guys want to talk to us or send suggestions about what movies we want to watch, by all means, please do. All right, talk to you guys later.